CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. How's that?
That's fine.
Okay, good. Five.
A little
four,
better.
Five. Four. We have 6 minutes. Five, four, three.
Okay.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution. We're addressing the IPCC report and what is to be done. We turn to fossil fuels, which are villainized by many, but especially coal. Coal-fired electric-generating plants that are prominent in major cultures such as China and India. Richard, I turn to our example here because we're not talking about banning coal. We're talking about banning fossil fuels such as natural gas from new homes in California at such and such a date, or banning gasoline engines on the highways of California at such and such a date. Does that contribute to the story, to ban things, to make it impossible? Because that is the dominant form of how to manage this. Ban coal mines, ban gasoline engines.
This is always a mistake. What you always have to do is to ask the question, if you ban a particular form of new technology, what's going to take its place? And one of the things that we've known working on environmental issues for a very long time is there is a tendency to set, as you're talking about, exceedingly high standards and not allow any new product to come on unless it meets those standards. So it turns out, for example, that if you spend a lot of money on technology, you could reduce the level of pollution from 2 to 1. But if you left it at 2, it'd be far, far cheaper. The way in which the current logic works is say if 1 is attainable, we don't settle for 2. Somebody won't pay for 1, so the existing plants continue to operate. The old cars continue to operate, and they spew out much more pollution than something else. So the correct formula is to say, look, we really can go a lot further, but we do 2 things. One is we will let you pretty much put anything on the market that you want, so long as you take off something which is a higher rate of pollution than the thing that you put on there. And then the second thing is if it turns out you do this, we're going to put a kind of a gentle tax on it so that you will try to move to the efficient level. So if your level is 5, you'll stop there. If it's 3, you'll go down and so forth. We won't do that. And so what you're going to do is keep clunkers on the road and bad coal plants in operation. And over again, the question always has to be, well, what do you substitute for what? This happens all the time in many, many industries, and it's a classic sign that people do not understand that the rate of substitution depends upon the cost that you have to engage in substitution, and it also invokes one of everybody's favorite laws, the law of unintended consequence. If you try to make new technology unbearably expensive, you'll get more of old technology, and you'll be worse off than if you'd done nothing at all.
The timeline is running here, and in our last couple of minutes, the timeline is pointing to 2050 and much worse consequences at 2100. However, there's also adaptation, and Mr. Guterres does not seem to address that, but that's part of the story that I've been learning, that we are already adapting to climate change. Is that an adequate response? Does that take into account life at the margins, Richard? We have a couple of minutes.
Well, again, it depends on how severe the adaptations are. I mean, there's some adaptations that you can make that would be extraordinarily cheap, and if those are the ones that you do, you're going to get a lot of benefit from it. There are other adaptations which are going to be highly expensive. So, you know, take, for example, one of the chronic problems that we have, which is we do have fluctuating sea levels with or without climate change, and do we want to give insurance to people who decide that they're going to build very close to the coastline? Or if it turns out you think about forest fires, one of the reasons why they've been so severe in California is people building clearings which are very close to national forests which have run dry and therefore become tinderboxes. So one of the simple things that you can do is to give no insurance subsidy to people who want to build in these dangerous locations. At that particular point, since the price now increases for them, they'll move back from the shore. They'll move further away from the forest. Those kinds of adaptations are relatively cheap to put into place, and we ought to do them. But here's another one. Well, do we want to build now a dam that's going to be 20 feet high in order to protect New York City from flooding, as people have talked about from time to time? Well, the answer to that question is probably not, because why would you build it today, even if there were a problem in 2100? better to build it later on when the thing is not going to depreciate. And there's also the danger that you're going to make a misestimation of what the anticipated sea level rise is going to be. Sea level rise has been relatively constant in the long run at about 6 inches 100 per 100 years, and probably it's going to continue at that rate. There's no definite evidence of which I'm aware which says that it's moving up. It's also the case that the sea rise tends to be cyclical. It's a little bit faster in some periods and a little bit faster in another period. So putting in this huge front-end investment when you're not sure where you are on the cycle is essentially probably a waste of money because you're coming too much for too little.
Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution writing about the IPCC report. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bush.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.